This is an interview with Sister Bernadine Vickers for the Youngstown State University Oral His Project on the Ursuline Sisters by Donna Blasio on April 19, 1975 at 3:45 p.m. at the Ursuline Mother House. Sister, could you tell us a little bit about your family background and your educational background?
Well, family background, I always think of myself as kind of a water baby. My mother always talks about being born beside the Susquehanna River, Sunbury and Susquehanna River. My father was born in Pittsburgh, in the Ohio River. And they always talk about those rivers so much. It really was sort of a romantic notion about it. My father had been a school teacher for a while, and then tired of that, and went to the railroad, and that was how we got to the Youngstown area. Dad was transferred. He was made superintendent of Lowellville Yards, which later became the first electronic site. I don't believe it's there anymore. I'm quite sure it isn't. At any rate, it was the first electronic geared yards, I guess that's what they call them, in our area. I might say that of interest was the fact that my father was Catholic, my mother was not. She became a convert. And when we're talking about the ecumenical approach to everything now, I said I sort of grew up in that atmosphere of having a very great respect for other people's religion and ideas and so on. So this ecumenical movement we're living through now is not at all new to me. I grew up in that atmosphere. I was educated in Pittsburgh until the third grade. I had the Sisters of Charity from Seton Hill. Those are the ones that went to Canada. They're found this year. And then we moved to Youngstown, and I went to the Immaculate Conception School and Ursuline High School until I entered. I was with the Ursuline Sisters all of that time, and that is probably how I came to enter the Ursuline community. I was better acquainted with the Ursulines than in the community. And then, of course, the real factor was that, as long as I can remember, I wanted to teach. And since the Ursulines were native teachers, that sort of decided that that was a very deciding factor for me. As far as the question of what helped make the decision to enter religious life, I think that's because I live in a very comfortable Catholic atmosphere, and we're very involved in the church. My father had always been a choir director of some kind or another, and my mother was very involved in church work also. I can remember particularly how many hours she spent during Depression when they used to have the meals for the children and so on. They would, there at the Immaculate, I know they prepared meals for those families who were in very bad circumstances. We didn't feel that at all because Dad was a railroader. He never missed a day's work all during Depression.
What educational experience did you have beyond high school?
Well, after I entered the Ursuline community, of course, I was preparing to be a teacher, and way back in those days, that was 2 years of training with all that was required for certification. It was called normal at that time. And then later I returned, I continued college, my college education at what was referred to as Sisters College in Cleveland at that time. And then later, when I was put into administration, of course, we were required to have our master's degree to either be in administration or even to teach a junior high level in our school. And I went on to Marquette University and I obtained my master's in education there. And just simply because of a natural interest I had in psychology, I managed to get enough elective courses in to fulfill the requirements for a school psychologist in the state of Wisconsin. And then I made inquiries here in Ohio and found out that I also met the requirements here. So I was certified as a school psychologist. I think they have one of the earliest school psychologist certificates. I think it's like number 53 or something like that in the state. And then later on, because of that, I was engaged by the superintendent of school, Tom Diocese, was the first diocesan school psychologist. And I guess worked in the Youngstown area schools. Beyond the Marquette University, I attended Western Reserve. I had a scholarship there one summer in human relations with my own eighth grade teacher, Sister Regina. The two of us had that scholarship awarded to us. And I attended Catholic University. That was Father Jenks, who's one of the earliest and finest persons in special education. I've done a lot of work with the retarded and the special education field. I don't think there was anything that I've done beyond my work for my master's or my graduate work has been simply to improve myself or have a better understanding of anything related to special education.
Could you describe the typical day when you first entered the order?
Well, at that time meant arriving very early because the young sisters, novices and juniors, lived, were on the site of Ursuline High School now. We lived in an adjoining mansion, so-called Wick Mansion there. And we had to rise about 4:45 and walk to the mother house, which is on Marion Avenue, just across from the cathedral now. That was always our pretty morning jog. And we had mass there then. And then from there, we would go out to our school and put in our day's work and then return to the junior aid, as we called it then, where the younger sisters were. We had a typical school day, as any school teacher would. Of course, included in our day's work the religious functions that we had as religious teachers also.
How has this changed throughout the years?
The pattern is somewhat the same. We still have our religious, the religious aspect of our lives that we adhere to. And with all the changes in our mode of life and the adjustments that have been made now during the renewal, it still is the all-important thing. We begin our day with our religious functions and mass. Go out to our work, whatever it is. I think our work has become much more diversified. Just for instance, as my own, I started out as an elementary school teacher. Went on into administration. I was in administration for 14 years. From there, I've been in high school for a few years. And then I went to the Walsh College full time. I had been teaching there part time for 5 years before that. And by the way, I taught for 2 summers at Youngstown University, too, in education, I think. from the call after 10 years as a full-time member of the staff there, I decided I would see whether or not all the psychology I was teaching to some of my young students really worked or not, whether it be functional or practical. So when they advertised for a supervisor for a daycare center, I took that over. I've been with staff now, it's 2 years in February. And as I said, I was a consultant there. I had some idea what it was all about, but these 2 years now have certainly convinced me that all our lectures aren't always the most practical in the world.
Where have you taught?
I first taught in my parish, in the Natural Conception on the east side, and later I was back there as principal also. I taught at St. Anne's. I closed that school up, and when the highway came through there, and we had to close that school, and I was there for the closing of that. Sister Charles and I opened St. Nicholas School in Struthers. I was there for that opening of school, of that school. And then I returned there later as principal also. But the thing about it is that St. Nicholas then was just a, we had three classrooms. I had three grades in the one room. When I went back as principal, I had 6th, 7th, and 8th grade grades. I had four, 48 children in that class, I recall. 11 girls and 37 boys, and that was quite a challenge to me. I think that was a rather unusual situation. The only school we had three grades like that I know of.
As a student at Ursuline, what can you remember about the high school when you were?
Well, it was quite different from many of the other high schools in the city. I know many of my friends were attending East. But at Ursuline, it was an all-girls school at the time. In fact, it did not become a boys' school until 3 or 4 years after I was out of it already, because my brother was in the first class of boys that went through Ursuline High School. I think that's what I remember about it particularly. It was geared completely to girls' activities, and it just didn't seem to be anything beyond the girls' world that ever saw it to it.
Why did you go to Ursuline?
Well, I was already in the community. I was a postulant, and I entered after the 8th grade.
Is there any type of uniform that you had to wear when you went to Ursuline, like girls do now?
Actually, don't recall. I know I had to wear my novice nun, the postulant uniform, so I wasn't even very aware of clothes. I don't think they wore them right in the very beginning. They did later on. The uniforms, I think, came later.
What was a typical day like for some of the academy?
The academy, it just seemed the same as our elementary school days, except that we changed classes. But they were 45 minutes or 50 minutes, and a little time to move from class to class, and that was all. It was just having different teachers for different subjects. That was the only difference.
What kind of classes did they offer?
It was more, it was really more of college preparation. It was supposed to be it was not geared to anything except college preparation. And then they had business classes to prepare the girls for office work and stuff at that time. But they did not at that time have home ed, things of that kind. looking at art. It was a, more of a bit, more of a typical liberal arts type thing. I mean, leading into a liberal arts education.
Can you describe the surrounds, the building, and the grounds?
There is still part of that building remaining. The part of space that's on Bryson Street, that is the building as I knew it. I can remember going to the dedication of that building. I can remember Bishop Shrim coming to for the dedication of that. And then opposite that, out closer to Madison Avenue, is the old, old academy, which I believe was at one time the barn and so on of the Witt Mansion, that great building that stands over there. That is where the gym and some of the art classes and music classes were. That's where they went, I know, for band practice and stuff like that. They did have a glee club and things of that kind. And later, I'm also coming out of band. Mm-hmm.
Do you recall any outstanding teachers you had in high school?
Well, strangely, the year I graduated from Immaculate Conception, my eighth grade teacher went to high school as the science teacher, and I had had her in fourth, fifth, and eighth grade in grade school, so it was just like moving on with her practically. And my seventh grade teacher had also been assigned to the high school by that time, so I felt very much at home there with them. Sister Charles had been my eighth grade teacher, and she became head of the art department there at the high school. And incidentally, she was the one who was one of my open St. Nicholas and school instructors. She was in the high school for a few years, and then she was taken out to be sent as principal to open the new school instructors. And Sister Regina remained on for years and years, and was one of the top science teachers in the county.
What are your duties now? What position are you in now?
Now I am a supervisor of the daycare center in Canton. I work under the Human Development Council. We are not actually federally funded, but we are sort of under the blanket of the Human Development Council. We maintain ourselves. We are licensed for 118 children, and we average about 80 children a day. We have, in our advertisement, we say infants from birth to 13. And at the present time, we have something like 4 infants and toddlers in that component, and the youngest is 2 months old now. We had him at 6 o'clock in the morning till 8:30 at night on a staggered program, depending upon the needs of the parents.
What's a typical day like in your job?
A typical day means opening the place, opening the site at 6 in the morning, being there to receive the children who are brought in either by their parents or brought in on a van. They are picked up at their homes, many of them. Means serving breakfast to them, having the children who go out to school ready for the van about 8 o'clock, getting them off to school, and then going on with the regular developmental program with the children who remain behind. And then again, about 3:30, the school children might return to us, and we give them their meals, and prepare them again for the van, they're sent home then. We do give 9-hour service to any child in the course of the day, which means that child receives all the care he would receive at home, he was given his meals, cared for in any way that is necessary, and above all, is given a, he said we keep a, have a curriculum so we have a full developmental program.
What unique things do you remember about any of the convents that you've looked at?
I think the mansion on Logan Road is probably the most unique. And just at this time of year again, it was one of the most beautiful places that, you know, I think in the whole city. We have acres of gorgeous johnfields and dogwood, and the forage is just beautiful. That tremendous terrace for the, when it was a mansion, was a dance spot, that's what it was at that time. Inside, well, the building itself, the mansion itself was Tudor design, Tudor architecture. And of course, we always laughed and said, yes, they had Tudor plumbing too, because it had been built for, you know, maybe half dozen people, and we were about 50 up there at that time. And everybody admired the magnificent windows, diamond-shaped windows, you know, probably the whole side of the building was just windows, diamond-shaped windows that we had to clean so regularly, and magnificent ceilings, and of course, when it came time for house cleaning and everything else, those of us who were brave enough got on scaffolding and did our own ceilings and things of that kind. And I was one of the ones who could get on the scaffolding. We often laughed, too, about the beautiful stairways that everyone who came in admired, you know. But all we knew was that, yes, we had plenty of stairways, but we couldn't sleep on the stairways, and we were very crowded in our dormitory quarters then. I also remember the elevator shaft that was empty when we were there because they had removed the elevator. And then, we all felt so romantic and a little bit old world like. We go down to the cellar, they had the wine cellars and the grating from the doors and things like that. You know, they were that way for ventilation and for protection and everything else, I suppose. The servants' quarters and things of that kind. It was really a typical mansion, you know, the way you dream of or read about mansions and see about these movies.
Could you describe how special occasions were celebrated?
Well, as usual, the liturgy, the religious aspect of it was always the greatest part of any of our holidays. For instance, Christmas, well, I can remember the thrill, the fatigue and the thrill, say, of a Christmas morning, because we had all of our own cleaning, preparation, decorating, and things of that kind to take care of before the holiday. Then, those of us who were engaged in preparing for the festivities at church always had so much preliminary work before, say, midnight mass and so on, preparing choirs. And I had children's choir for over 30 years, so that was always a big thing. We had the Christmas midnight pageants and things of that kind, and that meant much, much preparation. And we always had the full liturgy at the convent, and then we would go out to the church and have the same thing with the parishes. And as I said, it was always a thrilling thing. I always think of a lot of music, a lot of beautiful decorations, a lot of children involved in it and so on. And I can remember my first Easter being absolutely and utterly thrilled. I thought it was, he thought I was in heaven or someplace. Some of the older nuns had the most magnificent voices. I can remember Sister Agnes, who was our superior, had a magnificent voice. And Sister Irene, autism, his name is in voice, that I couldn't believe that they could harm, anybody could harm him the way they did. And that was utterly plain to me.
What years of your own religious life stand out and why?
That I can never answer. People have asked that, you know, for various reasons. And I can't think of any particular phase of my life that was outstanding. I think my life has been rather varied. In my teaching career, I've taught all the grades. I've been in administration. I've done some supervising. Got everything. Elementary school, high school, college, and now in daycare center. And now that I look back on it, I can't think that that's one, that I favor one any more than another. I often say that as I got into each one, I became completely absorbed in it, and I never feel as if I've ever done anything else. I just feel so comfortable with it. I think maybe the adjustments are easy for me, or I make adjustments rather easily. So, and I don't look on any one phase as liking it any better than another.
What sisters stand out in your memories and why?
Well, I still think that she was sort of my model as a teacher, my sister Charles, and I think probably it's because of my close association with them, having had them in grade school, having had them both in high school again, and having lived with them so long. And having worked with them so intimately, I was stationed with both of them, and as I said, through grade school, high school, and again at college level. I taught with both of them in those areas. And we're just lifelong friends. They both are deceased now, but rather recently, both of them. But I think those are two people I have admired most.
How would you say the depression that affected the order at the time?
I think the depression probably made us very aware of our commitment to poverty. I think that some of us just thought we were going to solve poverty by being very frugal and everything, and no one really related to us that we just didn't have anything more to spend, or that our funds were very, very limited. And I know that there were places and patches that for years could not keep up with the meager salary that we received even then. So that, as I said, we probably were initiated into a very frugal way of life that maybe was good for people who were supposed to be professing poverty. I don't think we ever separated the two things. And I know that at that time, I just thought it was because of our poverty. I never was really totally aware of the depression part of it.
What was memorable about the mother whom you served under?
You're referring to the superior, the male superior? Sister Agnes was superior at the time that I entered, and she was a genuinely warm creature. She was just beautiful, that thought of us too. Energetic, she worked ceaselessly. She just was a dynamo. I always think of Sister Holy Angels as another sister who has a very scholarly, very conservative person. Sister's mother, we call her Mother Vincent, was a very delicate person who served the community well. I think of Sister Paul as the one with the most foresight, I think. I suppose you'd say she had a little gambling blood in her because she was willing to take, willing to take risks to get things accomplished. And we are still, you might say, profiting by what she negotiated. She would have been perfect in this era now, a little more daring, a little more innovative, and determined, you know, and just a little more original in her approach to things, I think. And Sister Blanche was the next superior. She was a very energetic worker, quite an organized, I suppose. And Sister Edmarie was the next one, and the one who negotiated and brought about the realization of this mother house that we needed so desperately. I think we consider her quite a, if she were not here in the community, she'd probably be a remarkable career woman, you know, another dynamic person, I think. And then I think she was remarkable in her flexibility and her realistic attitude toward the changes that were brought about. If we had someone too rigid or unwielding, you know, in her approach to all this renewal, we probably would not have come through as well as we have. And then Sister Mary, now as a younger, very scholarly and very perceptive person, is probably carrying us through the remaining years of this renewal for her, I think.
Why do you think it's difficult to get modern women to enter religious life?
Well, I think it's the uncertainty of our whole world at the present time, that there isn't the same kind of security offered to anyone. On the other hand, too, I think there isn't a strong family spirit in the world today. There isn't the same kind of encouragement or awe of religious. I think the very fact that our numbers have dwindled, that young girls are not as acquainted with nuns. You take, for instance, grade school, you'll have a youngster who may go all through eighth grades and maybe meet two sisters as teachers along the way. The same in high school. There just isn't the same acquaintance. There's the same intimate acquaintance with nuns that there used to be. And as I said, it's probably the little uncertainty of everything at the moment.
What changes do you notice from when you first entered the way to the present?
I suppose it's a matter of attitudes. In the early days, everything was so certain, everything was prescribed. You just almost inhaled and exhaled according to the schedule, you know, and that was it. There was very little that was left to your own initiative. Everything, we went according to a very detailed turn of life. I think it was good. I think we had to exercise a lot of inner discipline. And this, to go back to your preceding question, I think this is it. There's a great lack of inner control or inner discipline in many people today. And I think that's one of the most difficult things there is in trying to fulfill a vocation. Not just a religious vocation. Your vocation, whatever you might care to be. It's up to the individual. And unless the individual has an inner strength from that self-control, self-discipline, not too much can be accomplished. You can go along with society and be very permissive, let each one do his own thing and everything else. But in reality, regardless of what career, whether it's a musical career, a business career, whatever it is, There's a certain amount of drudgery that goes into a successful life, and a person is not geared to that, is not trained, doesn't have that inner discipline, can't accomplish that, can't be successful.
What do you think is the future direction of the Earth in Order?
Well, I think we've been rather fortunate in our leadership. People have not been greatly inhibited. They've been allowed to experiment. There's been great flexibility. And there's been a great awareness that people's personal needs and personal desires must be met at times. So let's say the superiors have been very aware of this and have permitted people to experiment, and I think the individuals themselves are finding they need the stability, they need the security that community life offers. I don't foresee that we will run into any great difficulty. One thing that is unfortunate is that we do not have more people interested in religious vocations at the moment. But I think that will come. I think we're going through a period where we just have to wait for things to gel again. As I said, there's a lot of uncertainty in the whole world, not just the religious community. And I think we are feeling this also.
Do you have any other comments?